Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
But there were some moments in there I was like, you're a little bit wild, too wild-eyed for me.
Welcome to Sincast, presented by CinemaSins.
Welcome to the Sincast. This is Chris Atkinson from CinemaSins, joined by Jonathan Watkins.
Hello, hello.
And today we're going to be doing a mini-pod.
Mini-pod, I don't know. Julie-pod?
Yeah, sure, why not? of Richard Jewell, the latest Clint Eastwood movie about the 1996 Atlanta Olympics bombing in Centennial Park.
Which I sadly, and I was like 20, and I really don't know much about it. Like it, and I mean, I remember it, but.
Yeah, I remember was that it happened.
And this is really close to us, too. I mean, this is just, you know, a few hours away from us.
Yeah, I remember it happening, but I don't remember any of the aftermath of it.
I don't either.
Didn't remember Richard Jewell, didn't remember any of the stuff that happened. But yeah, it stars Paul Walter Hauser, who a lot of you have seen in I, Tonya.
Yeah.
I think he played Jeff Galooly in that.
Yes.
And then he was in Black Klansman.
Yeah.
And he's been in a lot of other things, but those are the last couple of things that I remember seeing him in. And he plays Richard Jewell, and he's portrayed in this movie as a guy who almost like Seth Rogen in Observe and Report.
Yeah, that's a really good comparison. I did not even think about that. But yeah.
He really wants to be a cop someday.
Mm-hmm.
So he's willing to do anything that he can to get to that point, including taking security guard jobs and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But the first job we see him at is at a lawyer's office doing supplies
mm-hmm.
for someone who's going to be very important in his life later, Watson Bryant, who's played by Sam Rockwell. And they develop this sort of, oddball friendship, worker relationship type of thing. And then he leaves to become a security guard at a university.
Mm-hmm.
At the university, he goes way over the line.
He's pulling people over on the highway to see if he can find drugs or something Yeah.
And he's entering people's dorms and looking for drugs and stuff. And he gets called. It's a pretty funny scene. He gets called into the dean's office or the president's office or whatever. He's like, what the hell are you doing? And he goes, well, I remember you saying that you didn't want any Mickey Mouse stuff here. And he's like, I remember you saying that. It's like, I wrote it down. He just writes, he says here, oh, yeah, I interrupted you at the banquet. And I said, I'm going to be your new security guard. And you're like, I don't want any, quote, Mickey Mousing here or whatever.
Yeah.
But he is allowed to sort of resign. instead of getting straight up fired.
Yeah, because he says, do you want to resign or do you want me just to fire you? Yeah. I remember that was pretty funny.
Yeah.
And then this guy actually, well, I guess we'll get into that later in spoilers.
Which then leads to his ultimate job, which is the working security somewhat for the Centennial Park during the Olympics.
Yeah.
The Olympics have a number of, they have Atlanta cops.
Yeah.
There's FBI there. Yeah. So he's seen as sort of extraneous. Yeah,
there's
in
like
that
organizations I didn't even know existed. There's like a GOI or something.
No,
it's
a GBI.
GBI, that's right.
Georgia Bureau.
Oh, that makes sense. Like TBI or whatever. Yeah.
Right.
Gotcha.
But it's ultimately lands him that job, and that's where all the stuff goes down. And he is he notices a bag that could be suspicious, and it turns out that it has three large pipe bombs in it.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to get to this point where there's not spoilers, but we know that the bomb goes off and we know that he is considered a hero. However, the FBI has turned on him as the prime suspect. That's the story.
Yeah, exactly, because they don't really have I don't even know. I mean, because I don't know how much I read a little bit about it last night, but I don't know how much they investigated before they went with him. But it seems like, at least in the movie, it was like, well, he's the one that found it, so let's just start looking into him first. And then they find some interesting things in his background, I guess, that kind of leads them to lock on to him.
Yeah, it's sort of one of those things where it's a sort of bias where you think this guy might have done it.
Mm-hmm.
So everything after that you find somehow paints a picture of this person being a bomber.
And furthermore, and you see this in the trailer, although I will admit this, they did use this angle, but based on what I had heard going into it, I thought it was going to be a little more outlandish, but the media has a lot to do with this too,
mm-hmm.
as far as, they kind of, they're getting their information from the FBI, but there's some shade, some shadiness going on there, like they decide to print and that kind of thing.
Yeah, and that's also been already brought up as far as it's like an actual real world story once this movie started hitting. Because the Olivia Wilde character in this, Kathy Scruggs is shown to be one willing to sleep with people to get stories.
Yeah. That was an interesting scene too, because, and I guess probably going into it, I just expected a lot more than what we saw, based on how offended, but I'm not a journalist. I'm definitely not a female journalist. So I don't want to, question what upsets other people. To me, it almost kind of seemed just maybe that had even happened before. And Olivia Wilde's even attested to that's kind of how she read it.
Mm-hmm.
That, they're just, two adults that, that's the way I read the scene, but it's triggered or it's upset quite a few people. So and namely her family, and she's not alive. So she can't speak to it.
Right.
The person is not alive. The journalist.
Mm-hmm.
Everything I've read about her, she seems a really good person. I will say, this is a movie though. Kind of we discussed this a little last week. We were talking about doing this. This is a movie kind of like Clint Eastwood, one of his recent movies, Sully,
mm-hmm.
where you have a person that, this isn't a spoiler because this is real world stuff. You have a person that didn't do anything, was legitimately a hero.
Mm-hmm.
And with Sully, it was even crazier because there was, as far as I know, there was really nothing negative.
There was no investigation into whether he did the right thing in Sully.
So at least here you do have the investigation.
Yeah.
But I still feel like they probably did elevate some of that just for dramatic purposes because, you're making a movie.
For sure. That's the way these things go. I want to kind of get into spoilers.
Yeah.
What is your grade for this movie?
I'm going to go ahead and give it a B+.
Okay.
Overall, I really liked it. There were moments in it that I was, I will say, this isn't quite as egregious as what we talked about with Jumanji, but I will say the first 15 or 20 minutes of this movie, I was kind of half in, half out. Like there were some things going on that I didn't really know if I liked the, I wasn't really connecting to it very well.
Mm-hmm.
Paul Walter Hauser, who kind of looks like Richard Jewell. I mean, granted, they make him look yeah. more like him, but I mean, but I don't know who else could have played him. His performance, even early on, I wasn't quite sure if I liked it.
Mm-hmm.
But he and the movie progresses very well. Once you get kind of past that bit, I started liking it more. There's some really good performances here. Mm-hmm. Sam Rockwell. Olivia Wilde is really good. I think she steals just about every scene she's in.
Man, we may differ on Olivia Wilde okay. a little bit. But
And like I said, maybe I just kind of like, maybe I felt for her a little more hearing all the stories yeah. going into it. I don't know, but she's not in it that much.
Yeah, let's get something very straight. I love Olivia Wilde.
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't like, maybe it's just the character she's playing,
yeah.
but she goes a little over the top for me in some of these scenes. And I don't know if that's
yeah.
because that's how she interpreted Kathy Scruggs to be.
Yeah.
But there were some moments in there I was like, you're a little bit wild, too wild-eyed for me.
Well, and I will say, once we get into spoilers, she was one of the problems I had towards the end. Like, if there was negatives, I have to bring
yeah,
up
and I end. And I'm definitely going to bring that up. Yeah. I know exactly what you're about to yeah. bring up there. Overall, I think I'm around the same area. I feel like I'm going to give this an A-.
Cool.
I feel like once the movie really kicks into gear, it yeah. never sort of stops.
Yeah, exactly.
And by the end of it, I was just like, wow, this was really good. I really enjoyed all this. So yeah, we're in the same ballpark there.
For sure.
And I think some of the flaws that it has could knock it down to a B+, but right now I'm thinking A-.
Well, yeah, and I actually think that the way, which I just saw this yesterday, so obviously I haven't seen it again, but I think the way the movie progresses, I think I might actually like the beginning better when I watch it again.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think there's things that Hauser is doing that make sense later, like the way he's playing the character.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because he's got to get to that, like, where he realizes he's got to be all in and, you know, try to clear his name and all that kind of stuff.
This is definitely Paul Walter Hauser's movie. I've liked him in everything I've seen him in so
Absolutely.
Far. Absolutely. But there's something about his face that is so expressive and so, like, range of emotion while he's talking
yeah,
and everything.
Yeah, no, for
he'll,
sure.
He does something with his face that very few actors do.
Yeah.
And he's constantly interesting and constantly engaging. I don't know. I don't follow, even though I love watching the Oscars and everything,
yeah.
I don't follow, like, who's going to get nominated all that stuff. But I feel like this should get nominated.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I don't believe he got nominated for a Golden Globe. But in this movie, we should also say this movie is not doing well.
Right.
It was one of Clint Eastwood. I mean, it actually grossed almost $10 million less opening weekend than that 15-17 to Paris or whatever.
Yeah.
Like that actually, it only made like $5 million, which is kind of weird. Now, I will say this is one that during the holidays, like especially older people, because like the audience I was with yesterday, there was probably 25 people and it was an afternoon.
Yeah.
And but it was skewed quite a bit older than me.
Mm-hmm.
So you might have some people, I mean, this still might kind of chug along and make $5-6 million a week for a while, but it's definitely not gonna be a hit.
Yeah, I'm actually surprised that this isn't a little bit bigger of a hit. Because the trailers were great. And with Clint Eastwood's name on it, you'd expect a little bit more of a, you know, of an audience. But it also had to go up against Jumanji. There's Star Wars coming up.
Frozen 2
still killing it. Not that any of those movies are really this movie's audience, but it's still kind of buried in all the hoopla of all those other movies.
But they do affect appearance if they've got to take their, you know, if they're going to go to the movies, they might be more likely to take their kids to see something instead of going by themselves to see this. But even the Mule, I mean, it made money last year.
Yeah, Mule was a decent hit, actually. I think it ended up hitting 100.
It was $103.8 million in the U.S. It was $174 worldwide. So, I mean, Sully was a hit. So, I mean, he typically does really well.
And this is one of those cases, it feels like, where you have a very plainly named movie with an actor not most people have seen.
Yeah.
And so even though the trailers tried very hard to show you Olivia Wilde and Sam Rockwell and Kathy Bates and all these people, it didn't, for average Joe movie goer person, they probably were like, I don't know who that is. I don't know what this person is.
Yeah. And
1996 bombing. Why should I care?
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. We're talking about, like, we don't remember much about the aftermath. So, I mean, there might be a lot of people like us that are just like, I don't, that doesn't mean anything to me. Mm-hmm. But I don't remember if they said, how many people died. Or did any?
Well, that was another I would say maybe flaw of this movie is that it didn't really go through the casualties very well.
Yeah,
it killed one person and it injured 111 other people.
Yeah, that's right. Alice Hawthorne.
Now there is a one point in there where Rockwell says, "Here's the 113th victim," pointing to Jules' mom.
Yeah.
And so they do quantify it, but I don't think I remember even hearing one word about someone dying, which one did.
Yeah, it was the two women. It was one of them because she was like bleeding out or something.
Yeah, Alice Hawthorne was killed, and then I guess somebody else had a fatal heart attack while running to the scene, but then the bomb wounded 111 others.
Yeah.
But that's one thing the movie kind of sort of skips over a little bit.
Okay.
I felt like, anyway.
Yeah.
Let's go on to spoilers.
Let's do it.
No spoilers!
Kevin Spacey is Kaiser Soze.
He's Luke's father is actually Darth Vader. She's the sister and the daughter. They just
No. I'm reading the books.
I guess the main spoiler is he didn't do this. It was another guy by the name of Eric.
As Rudolph?
Eric Rudolph. Eric Rudolph is one of these guys who had committed what, four bombings, I believe. He was this extremely like right wing kind of guy who hated Bill Clinton, and he thought that socialist policies were coming in and all that type of stuff. They know the movie doesn't focus too much on Eric Rudolph, obviously.
No.
It just is sort of a coda at the end where Jewel is actually working as a police officer at the end.
Yeah.
Sam Rockwell comes in and says, "Oh, they caught the guy."
Yeah.
And Jewel says, "Can I go to his arraignment and all that?"
Yeah.
So he didn't do this. Now, the character of Jewel is shown as this guy who people kind of laugh at. He's way over the top. He's he's like Seth Rogen in Observe and Report.
Yes.
He's exactly that guy.
Yep.
If there's one thing the movie I think has a hard time with is his character changes. One of the things is we see Jewel as this over the top zealous guy at the university, but once he gets to the Centennial Park thing, he's just kind of like average Joe, not going too far, very deferent to the cops, everything.
Yeah, that's true.
It doesn't look like he's just overstepping anything.
Not in that, but no.
So there's nothing in the middle of that where he's saying, "I've learned the error of my ways," or whatever. "I'm going to start being this way now."
Yeah, that's true. I mean, we can assume maybe that after that stuff at the university, maybe he was trying to tone himself down a little bit, but nothing. But I mean, because they even show him, like, they go out of their way to show him handing water to a pregnant lady.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing wrong with that, but I mean, it was just kind of random.
Which,
you know?
I think I heard something about this. It's funny, he just goes up and assumes the woman is pregnant.
Yeah.
Just gives her water.
I mean, she's got a bump and she's kind of struggling to walk. But yeah,
but
that's not really a great idea.
It's one of those things you never do.
No.
And but uh, yeah, but by the time he gets to the Centennial Park thing, he's just kind of like, he's just kind of cool. But he's still laughed at. He goes and he hangs out with the cops. The cops ask him of his opinion on things.
Yeah, they do.
But they're not really, they don't really care what his opinion is. They're doing it to laugh at him.
Yeah.
And there's even a point where he sees someone walking with a bag similar to one we see later.
Yeah.
Where he's like, isn't that bag kind of unusual? I'm going to go check on this and everything. And they're just like, whatever. And of course, it does turn out to be nothing the first time.
Yeah, he's got beers or something.
Yeah, a guy had beers for all of his friends and everything. But then later on, when he sees the kids out drinking and everything, and he accosts them and everything, that's when he sees that other bag that looks exactly like that one.
Yeah.
And he starts trying to get people interested in it. To all the cops' credit in this, they don't just say, I mean, they kind of don't think there's anything.
Yeah.
But they at least investigate it. They at least call people out.
Yeah, because I think he keeps saying it's regulation. You know, we got to check it. And then the cops are even like, you know, God damn it, it had to be you on this shift, didn't it? Because they knew they had to do it.
Right.
Even though they didn't want to. But then of course he ends up being right. So, which is still crazy to me. Like, I don't know exactly. I mean, I'm guessing it went down similar to that. I don't know where they're getting those accounts from, but, that's just nuts to me. Cause you would think, and I'm trying to even think, cause I mean, this is pre 9/11. So I'm not even positive. Like, somebody just ditching a bag somewhere was even like something that was as, you know, as talked about, I guess.
Yeah. Although it is the Olympics. And I think the Olympics in general, are going to get, heightened, sort of awareness of, things going on and everything.
And this was, I guess, a little bit of a side event. This is like where they had some artists doing concerts. Mm-hmm. Like, it was like Kenny Rogers, I think. I can't remember who was performing when the bomb.
Yeah, they kept saying something like, is it Jack Back?
I don't remember. I knew the song. I don't remember the song right now, but I mean, I knew the song at the time.
Yeah, I know that the song is very familiar.
Because he wouldn't leave because he was sick. Oh, that was the other thing. He was sick, but he just refused to leave. And then at one point, he's like, no, this is my favorite band. And they're like, Jack Back's your favorite band? Or whatever. Whatever it was.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
People don't take him seriously in general, but because he's an enough persuasive, he gets the ball rolling on this thing. The other thing that's interesting about him is he's got this very pronounced Southern drawl, but this is that old Andy Kaufman thing where he says, I would never like confuse a scientist with a Southern accent or something like that.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Something to that thing. But this guy knows his shit, man.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he's clearly read up on everything, and
he tells Sam Rockwell at the beginning, I'm like going around, I'm reading up on all the penal codes and everything like that, and Rockwell's like, yeah, what a great life, but
well, we even see he notices details too, because like when he first meets Rockwell in his little office, he's like, you know, he asked for some tape. He's like, oh, check your drawer. I saw you were out.
Yeah.
And then he even got him like Snickers, and he knew that he liked Snickers, you know, so you can clearly they're setting, you know, he obviously pays attention.
Yeah.
To things.
So like it's an interesting character because it's easy to dismiss somebody with the Southern accent.
Yes.
For some of you out there, I have a Southern accent that's no different from
From
Paul Walter Hauser. But Paul Walter Hauser has an even more pronounced Southern accent than I do.
And he's a larger individual.
Yeah.
Lives with his mom.
Yeah, so it's easy to dismiss everything he says and just laugh at him and all that. But he's able to get them on this. And I love the scene when they do discover that it's actually pipe bombs in there, because
everything
from that moment is so tense. It's the old Hitchcock thing.
Yeah.
Show them a bomb and then, you know, show the audience a bomb.
Yeah, everything about that scene is brilliant. Like the he drops the flashlight, and so like that, even just something as simple as that, but the light shining on it for some reason adds so much to that scene. And then they throw in, I mean, at some point they throw in like some slow motion and stuff, but he's running around, they're trying to get everybody out of the way, and then you don't know when it's going to go off. And I assume that, you know, the bomb crew was going to get there, because I didn't know what exactly happened.
The bomb crew has 20 minutes to get there once the one guy discovers what's in there, and then the rest of the time is everybody trying to push the people closer to the stage and all that. And
it's insane that more people didn't die.
Absolutely.
And then there's, what is it? They say, he says something about that. When the drunk kids, when they dropped it, it got turned down.
Mm-hmm. And it was so supposed to blow out.
Yeah. And it blew up instead.
Yeah.
So that was really interesting. It's always interesting when things like that happen. It's like, just the slightest difference, and you know, that could have been 800, 900, 1,000 people dead.
Yeah.
That was a great scene. That was where I probably really started getting into it. I don't know, just leading up to that, it just kind of felt like we got to get to this.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe I just wanted to get to that. So like I said, if I rewatch it, maybe I'll enjoy that a little more. But that's definitely when I started getting a little more into it, and I thought it took off from there. With a few minor hiccups.
Yeah, I think this is one of those movies, though, that once you've seen the rest of it and you go back and watch it again, the Richard Jewell character will be so familiar to you, and you know his thing and everything, that the beginning starts to become better in retrospect. The beginning part that you may not have liked becomes better in retrospect. I don't know, but so he's definitely a hero. He gets on the news. Mm-hmm. He's telling his story, and if there's one flaw to his character, it's that he respects law enforcement so much that he trusts them implicitly and explicitly. John Hamm plays the FBI agent who was there Centennial Park, there's all this tremendous pressure for the FBI to come up with somebody, and they are really fast to latch on to this idea that because somebody in 1984 tried the same thing, security guard, trying to bomb the LA Olympics, and it turned out to be, you know, they turned out to be the security guard, and then some other profile turned out to be a security guard. They have some sort of hero complex type of thing. They decide that he did, without any evidence, just decide that, oh, this fits exactly the other thing.
And I kind of got the impression that the professor, the Charles Green character, the one that fired him or let him resign, I kind of got the impression like he actually called the FBI maybe, and even gave them an idea that it could be him.
Yes. He says it would have been upsetting to me if I didn't say something. About this guy. And yes, he tells them all about his past, where he was just over the line as a security guard. It goes to show that people just generally think of you as that person all the time. You can never change.
Kind of reminded me, and that character, I mean, that was at least somewhat based on something that really happened, because Jewel sued him in real life after that. And I think even maybe settled. But this reminded me kind of Arlington Road. That's what kept popping in my head, was Arlington Road, because that's the whole thing with Arlington Road is, like, you know, Jeff Bridges says that thing at the beginning, like, we can make anybody out to be the bad guy.
Yeah.
You know, just the way you paint the picture and the way, you know, you move past, and then all of a sudden you have all these people saying, yeah, you know, I always noticed something about him.
Well, and just
that was a little off.
And just think about, and this is where Olivia Wilde comes in, because once the FBI has decided it's Richard Jewell, they're going to, they start to do their investigation. And then Olivia Wilde, who works for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, Kathy Scruggs, goes to visit him at a bar and is desperate to have some sort of story.
Yeah.
Because I guess in the past she has delivered on a lot of great front headline stories, like big front page stories.
Yeah, but they actually made her go cover the Kenny Rogers concert. Like, I didn't really completely understand.
I don't
that.
Know, but I think it's, I think there's something, I think it's something to do with the other women or the other reporters are jealous.
Yeah, and, yeah, because she has that moment where she's like, I'm so sorry, all my big murder cases are.
Yeah, yeah. So I think it's all because of like some sort of office politics type of thing that she has to cover the Kenny Rogers thing. But
yeah,
she's desperate to find this story and basically goes to John Hamm, and Hamm, she sort of like starts seducing him and everything at the bar. And then he eventually, he, you know, he's like, okay, well, we're looking into Richard Jewell. And then there's no responsibility here. They in the effort to get that story out, they publish it without any facts and everything. Yeah. And then it just goes to show all you have to do is say something.
Yeah. I would like to kind of know more about the real, I don't know that we could possibly know the real story there. And I know the Tom Shaw character that John Hamm plays, mm-hmm. I think he's kind of an amalgam of different people.
Probably.
From what I read, he's not a real, like, Tom Shaw is not a person.
Right.
So I don't know if that's exactly what happened, you know, but I mean, that's definitely what happens in the movie, and the way they do it in the movie, I mean, Shaw is awful. Like,
yeah.
Cause I mean, I can't imagine what would like, I mean, he destroys, Richard Jewell's life for the next, you know, however long mm-hmm. this, the time frame is, just with that one little thing.
Yeah.
Cause in all honesty, I mean, Olivia Wilde, I mean, the Kathy Scruggs character, I mean, they even make some comments like that they checked with a couple other sources on some things. I don't know how much of that was true, mm-hmm. but I mean, they do at least act like they covered their ass.
But that's the thing. All they have to say is that he's the focus of the investigation.
Yeah. Yeah.
Without he hasn't, you know, and that will just it just ruins somebody's life immediately. It may turn out later. That's the brilliant part of the ending of this. Hamm gives Rockwell that little note that says we've completely cleared him of the investigation.
So good. Yeah.
And Rockwell is like, well, I guess you're going to go out and tell the whole world about this one, aren't you?
Yeah.
And
oh, to John Hamm. Yeah.
And Hamm is like, as you know, we may be done with him and everything, but I still believe your client is guilty as hell, which we saw in the trailer.
Yeah. Which I wonder if that's even, I don't know how they could believe that he's the, maybe they just don't want to admit they're wrong, but like, there's nothing about it that makes sense.
I think it's just that bias has turned, you know, once you start adding so many things that you think make the complete picture, there's nothing that's going to change your mind.
Well, and they don't know Richard personally, so I mean, obviously, you know, they're gonna like him having all those guns, and you know, that's a thing. They do a search of his house and they take all of his stuff out, and he's got guns, and like they take all his Tupperware and and all that kind of stuff. But you know, they're gonna look at things differently. What that college professor tells them, they're gonna they're gonna see that differently than like Richard Jewell's mom is gonna say it. I mean, that makes sense.
Well, and it's fun too when I think it's Kathy Bates, maybe his mom asks, why do they need the Tupperware? Why do they need videos?
And
so the Tupperware is where they kept the nails. Yeah. That's standard. And then the videotapes, they were wondering if we may have shot a manifesto on there or something like that. That's where I believe Watson Bryant is like, aren't you mad? Aren't you?
Yeah, it was around that time. I know Bobby, his mom, Kathy Bates, she's like, why do you keep defending them?
He's like,
I'm not defending you. I'm just telling you what it is.
And
then there's a part where Watson's like, you know, aren't you mad? And then finally, I'm trying to even think, it's when they bring a friend of his in.
Yeah.
And imply that, because there's a thing with the phone. They can't place Richard Jewell at the payphone.
Right.
The timing doesn't work out. So then they just decide, which this is kind of crazy, even though they've been focusing on this whole lone bomber profile,
mm-hmm.
now all of a sudden they're just willing to believe that, oh, he had a partner, not thinking about the profile anymore. And so they decide that it's this friend of his. I can't even remember who that was, but...
I can't remember either.
But regardless, it's one of his friends, and they imply that maybe they even have a homosexual relationship.
Of course.
And,
you gotta make it somewhat salacious. Precious, right?
And I don't know if that really happened.
I knew as soon as, because there the first time we noticed that he couldn't have made the call and been over in the park at the same or like in the amount of time that I knew as soon as that was brought up, I was like, they're gonna just say he has an accomplice now.
Yeah, yeah.
And like that was, it's funny you brought that up. It's funny they just kind of just gloss over it too, because they're like, because I think it's Rockwell. I keep going back and forth between character names and actor names. Rockwell, well, who plays Watson Bryant, says something like he had this lone bomber profile, and then John Hamm's like, well, you know, we all know that profiles are just a starting point, an entry point, right? You know.
Yeah, that was a good scene. But then but also the reason I brought that up was because that's where once his friend comes over and is explaining to him like this is what they asked me, this is what I told him. That's when he kind of like a flip switch in his head, and then Rockwell's like, "Are you ready to fight?" He's like, "Yeah,
mm-hmm, yeah." Well, and it's truthful to the character that the fact that someone has accused him of being gay is his driving force here.
Yeah, and at that point, I didn't really get that was it. But then when they finally go meet with John Hamm and the Ian Gomez character with, you know, he goes with his lawyer. That's like one of the first things he asks. He's like, "Can we please tell them that I'm not gay?"
Yeah.
You know, and that might have been true to the character.
Yeah, yeah, very true. And I don't think any of us like to be lied about in any sort of way, and you know, it's understandable. But it's kind of it was kind of a weird thing watching a movie in 2019.
Yeah,
and someone is just like that upset about it. Of course, it's 96 is when this is happening.
That's
but.
True, and even that's what I'm saying. And even if like it is kind of one of those weird things where you're like, even if that conversation happened, did we have to have it in the movie?
Yeah. Yeah, that's the way I sort of felt about it. I was like, it just doesn't, unless it's like just key, and I guess it is.
Yeah, but around that time too, when Olivia Wilde goes and speaks to John Hamm, that's when I started not liking her performance, or at least the way the character was written.
Yeah, I totally don't blame her for this.
No, it's the way the character was written, because all of a sudden it's like it's just a 180.
Yeah, there's a point where Bryant walks into the AJC and they do a very sort of unwitty back and forth, which I actually like. I like it when characters speak like real people.
Yeah, yeah.
And like everything that comes out of somebody's mouth isn't some like Sorkinism.
No. That and felt like a real conversation.
Yeah, so they're sort of going back and forth insulting each other and doing that, well, kiss my ass and blah, blah, blah. And it's after that she starts thinking, well, maybe I was wrong about this. But this is a 180 that nearly gives you whiplash.
Oh, yeah. I mean, she's like crying.
Yeah.
Like all of a sudden. And like, you know, when she goes and figures out the phone thing, and then she goes and confronts Hamm, and then she's upset about that. And there is a point where she's crying too. There's like all kinds
of. Yeah, there's a point where it's during the his mom's speech to Bill Clinton.
Oh, that's what it was. Yeah, yeah.
Basically
yeah.
saying, like, you know, please, you know, exonerate my son, get him off of this, blah, blah, blah. She's in the back and she's got tears in her eyes.
Yeah,
that's
what it was.
I'm like, you were this driven, didn't give a fuck reporter, and now because tables have turned slightly, you've decided I was totally wrong about that, and now I'm a good character.
Yeah, and it was just a really weak script moment in an otherwise like pretty stellar film at that point. You know, the way it was going, that did kind of slow it down a little bit for me. But I really like God, I always forget his name. I really like Hauser in these later scenes.
Mm-hmm.
I really like that point, even though I know it's a little cheesy and it's very like it's kind of that Rocky moment or whatever, where he's like I'm fucking done. I'm gonna go out there and, you know, take him down.
Yeah.
But he pulls it off. Like, he makes it totally believable, whether or not that's how exactly it went. Because I can't believe that Watson hadn't already been doing things up to that point. I mean, he kind of makes it seem like, okay, are you ready to let me go, you know, help you now?
Mm-hmm.
But it's like, I have a feeling he probably, as a lawyer, he probably did some stuff before that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That was a great scene, and we don't know if that actually happened. And again, we've seen a lot of biopics this fall, and every time I think, oh, there's no way that happened, someone comes and tells me it did.
Yeah, I know.
And that whole interview at the end where he has his moment, I'm like, did that really happen? Where he says, he's like, I was just thinking, do you even have a case against me?
Yeah, it's like he finally kind of figures out, like, I don't have to answer these questions because unless you actually have something on me, I mean, and then he gives that bit about, you know, I'm just, even though Watson, Brian had already said this earlier in the movie, but he makes the comment about, like, I'm really upset that, A, people are not going to want to go to the FBI. People, like security guards in the future that notice a package, they're not going to want to do anything about it because they're not going to want to be me. And then B, the real bomber's out there right now, and he's probably going to kill more people because you're focusing on me.
Yeah.
And those are very valid points if he's innocent. You know, I mean, those are very valid points.
For sure.
So probably something like that went down, but it's a really well scripted scene. It's a really good scene. And you make a point. This is like we were talking about the Mr. Rogers movie, Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood. One highlight from that was that it wasn't a generic biopic. This is definitely more of a generic as far as the structure. This is very much a very familiar type. In fact, it's very similar to Sully. It's very similar to Sully, the structure of it, which is interesting because Eastwood did that. But I still, and so maybe that kind of holds me back a little bit from giving it that, quite getting it to that A. But I will say for that type of film, it's top of the game. I mean, it's at the top, you know, if you're going to talk about those kind of biopictures. Like, this is way better than stuff like Ray or Walk the Line, you know, stuff like that. I mean, this is so much better than that, in my opinion.
Well, yeah,
so
there's an actual sort of plot that you could see as a regular movie.
Yeah, well, maybe those are bad comparisons because those are covering the life. This is covering a moment. But,
yeah.
But we've seen a lot of movies like this, and I think this is one of the better versions of that type of movie.
For sure. I don't know if there's anything else we need to discuss here.
I mean, I do think it's interesting. I mean, we've mentioned Rockwell. I think it just shows how great of an actor he is that, I thought about it later, like how good he is in it. But he's just so, just like, he's perfect in the movie. But, like, I don't really know how to explain it. Like, it's not a real show-off-y role that he's kind of been more doing lately. So I have a feeling, like, this probably won't get a nomination, but I actually liked him quite a bit better here than I did in Three Billboards.
He's playing just a real dude here, and someone who's really good at their job, and it's also kind of fun to watch him. I guess that's like Bryant Gumbel or somebody on the Today Show.
Yeah.
Watching him ask, you know, like, do you know about all this stuff about your client? And he's like, well, I haven't been able to do a full investigation yet and everything. And then he goes to Richard and he's like, you're going to have to tell me everything, man, because they just took a giant shit on me on the Today Show, whatever they said.
And I guess we should mention too, Nina Arianna plays Nadia, which is, I don't know if they're married at that time. She eventually is his wife in real life, regardless of whatever. But because they even have that thing at the end where you find out that Bobby Jewell like babysits their kids on the weekends and all that kind of stuff.
I first noticed her in Stan and Ollie.
Yeah, yeah.
Did you see Stan and Ollie?
I haven't seen Stan and Ollie yet. I saw her. She's in Midnight in Paris, and I've seen her in a few other
Florence
things.
Foster Jenkins, apparently. And, she is fantastic. She's, it was funny. Normally, an actor like this, I struggle forever to think of where I've seen them before.
Yeah, yeah.
But her, I was like, she was so distinct that almost instantly came up with Stan and Ollie for her where I had seen her, because she was great in that.
Yeah, and they make her look older in this too, because I just looked, she's only 35.
Yeah.
So they make her look quite a bit older than that, and she's like the dark hair and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But no, she's excellent, and like I don't think, like on the page, I don't think there's much to that role.
No.
And she definitely elevates it. Rockwell probably, her and Rockwell have really good chemistry, and so I think that helps too. But she was definitely a standout for me.
Yeah. She says something to the effect of, when the government in my country says somebody's guilty, you know that they're not.
Yeah.
But apparently in this country, it's different.
And she's just like trying to get him, because I get the impression they don't get a lot of cases because he decided to get his own practice, and they don't really talk about that too much.
Yeah.
But she makes it pretty clear that he needs to take the case, like, you know, because they need to do something to make their, you know, firm stand out or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I love Rockwell in it. I love Rockwell and Hauser played off each other really well, too. Kathy Bates is really good. I mean, she doesn't have a whole lot to do here, but in the scenes that she does, she's always
nails it.
She's Kathy Bates. And there's scenes that could be like insanely cheesy that maybe are still a little cheesy, but like there's the scene where Richard yells at her,
mm-hmm.
and so she goes to the bathroom, and I mean that scene could have been really cheesy, and it maybe it's a little bit, but those actors pull it off.
I also do like when Bryant comes to the apartment for the first time. And he has to navigate through all these reporters, and the reporters are asking these questions. There's some really interesting loaded questions in there.
Yeah.
Like, did you help Richard set the bomb?
I noticed that.
Which is, it's funny because, you ask yourself, why doesn't someone answer a question like that? Because, you know, if you say no, it's a loaded question. If you say no, then you're implicitly saying that he did set the bomb.
You can definitely read it that way.
Yeah. This is the, you know, did you stop beating your wife question, right?
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
This is those type of things. And so, like, he gets in there and starts talking to him a little bit. And then he turns to Kathy Bates and says, okay, we are going to have to talk. By ourselves, because this is attorney-client privilege, and if there's a third person in here, there's no more privilege, and then they can ask you anything that we talk about and everything. And then she just very much understands, goes out. I love that scene.
Yeah.
I love little stuff like that.
Yeah, I did, and this movie's full of that. So, and I think that's a lot of why this movie's good. No, this is a really good movie.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm probably being a little stricter on it than I need to be, but
I think you're right on.
It's just a really good movie. This is a perfect, like, I was thinking, I think I've used this example before, but this really felt like back in the day when like the networks would have network premieres of like big releases,
mm-hmm.
like this would totally be like a Sunday night, like, you know, network premiere of Richard Jewell, and be like, you know, 20 million people watching it. This would be like a perfect like Sunday night movie just to sit back and end your week on, I guess. It's just a really interesting story. And I read some stuff. I don't know everything that happened, but I was curious enough to look up some stuff. I do know they sued a ton of people after this was over.
Mm-hmm.
Settled quite a bit too. Like, I mean, a lot of the Atlanta Journal, actually, they were the ones that actually wouldn't settle. I don't know exactly what went down there. But, like, they sued, like, was it Brokaw? Was it Tom Brokaw?
Oh, I don't know.
Was he the one that was on the air? Was he the one in the movie?
He's the one where he's like, you know, their focus of their investigation is on Richard Jewell.
I don't remember if it was him they sued or if it was the network.
And Kathy Bates says, why is Tom Brokaw saying this about you?
Yeah, so they went after, they said that he was defamatory, and then obviously CNN they sued,
mm-hmm.
and then obviously, like I said, they sued the professor or the university. I don't remember which.
Yeah.
And I mean, he was able, I mean, he died, was it 2006?
2007. He was 44.
He had diabetes.
And he had died of heart failure.
Yeah.
There's a scene early on, well, somewhere, where it shows him, like, crouching down and feeling his chest and everything to sort of give you an idea that he might have some sort of issue there. But, here's another thing the movie sort of glosses over. I don't know how he was able to sort of repair his name afterwards.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I was surprised he was hired as a cop.
Yeah, I don't. It feels like the damage that was done in this movie is more than just, oh, well, they found you innocent and aren't looking at you anymore.
Yeah.
Because everybody who ever paid attention to that case was like, oh, Richard Jewell, he did it. And then, you know how news cycles are. They don't ever come back.
I know.
and say, oh, well, this guy didn't do it. We should have an apology. We should look at our sources better. We do all these type of things. We never have that.
No, the one thing I did read, Janet Reno, apparently, in maybe in an interview or something, she made a comment like a couple years later saying we should have treated him better or something like that. That was like the only thing I could really find out of everyone that could have said something.
Yeah.
I'm sure there was a few more, but that was the one that was noted. And oh God, I lost my train of thought. But yeah, I was the same way with you. Like, I mean, he apparently got to be a police officer, at least a desk officer or something.
Mm-hmm.
But he definitely probably didn't have the life he could have had.
Yeah,
because of all this, and you know, I mean, he was a hero.
Well,
like,
yeah,
he did
just think about how completely his life changes if he's just a hero and it stays that way.
Yeah.
Then he can get into whatever police department he wants to.
Write his book or have somebody write a book for him.
Yeah.
There's a whole thing in there about
and
that.
And he's plenty good enough. He could have become a detective. He could have been an FBI guy himself. I mean, it's just a lot of things went off the table once on.
Yeah,
that.
Yeah, because like you said, I mean, he's very, very smart.
Okay, well, what did you guys think of this? The few of you that may have seen this movie, apparently. go to Sincast, presented by CinemaSins on Facebook. We're also on SoundCloud, Reddit, CinemaSins Twitter, Music Video Sins Twitter, and we're also on Discord. If you want to get on Discord, you can go to Reddit on the right side of the page. There's a live link. Or you can go to Facebook and ask me for one in the private messages. Also, you can reach Jonathan at...
I am on Twitter at SamLoomis13. We have a TV Sins Twitter. And you can hear me every week with Aaron Dicer and Danae Hughes on Behind the Sins.
All right. Well, that'll do it for this mini pod. It's Chris Atkins and Jonathan Watkins. We'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening. Comment on our episodes on our SoundCloud page. Check us out on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, and Reddit. And be sure to visit CinemaSins.com.
Richard Jewell, do 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 do, na 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 na. Oh my goodness.